as I mentioned earlier, Avery is now here to present regarding applicant support and the new GTLD program. Avery, if you would like to go ahead, please.
Thank you. And I'm going to go through these slides very quickly because I have limited time of yours. So first thing we've got is, we call this group the Joint ACSO Working Group, so that's why we call it JAS, and I'll be referring to it as JAS all the way through, but it's the new GTLD, support for new GTLD applicants. The most important thing about this timeline is that, A, we've been working on this, but the very first item on the timeline is GAC letter to the to ICANN back in March 10 that basically said, and what about making this thing affordable for people from developing countries and developing economies? And, you know, that inspired the board, I assume that inspired the board, to put its proposal. And from there, we got chartered by both the GNSO and ALAC to come up with some proposals. I looked inside the letter you most recently sent to the board on things that were still of concern and didn't see the applicant fee issue, so I hope that isn't an issue that you're no longer interested in, because we're sort of counting on GAC interest in the topic of support for those from developing countries, and that's part of the reason I'm here. So the working group has basically produced a milestone report, and the first charter we had sort of basically give us the general shape of what we would be talking about. And that has been published, and just I was informed today that it is now available not only in English, but in the five UN languages as well. We wanted to make sure that it had as wide a distribution as possible. What's most important on this slide is that the need criteria, that basically what we have to establish is that an applicant has need. And the other categories, once need is established, then we're looking more towards the nonprofit than the profit, applicants located in emerging economies. One of the things, when we did a draft of this report, AFRALO came back to us and said, well, you know, in developing countries, it's often a local entrepreneur who is really the one that needs the support. We don't have sort of the same non-commercial, non-profit structure. So basically, we've amended since then to include that local entrepreneurs in markets where market constraints make normal business operations more difficult. So, but still always the need criteria would need to be met. Applications in languages whose presence on the web is limited, and community-based applications such as cultural, linguistic, and ethnic. Now, on all of these, we have more work to do. We got basically feedback from the board that said, you know, how do you define need criteria? So we've gone back to the GNSO and the ALAC saying, please charter us to answer that question, because that wasn't a question. We needed at first to just establish the large scope of the idea. Now we're being asked, you know, how do you define non-governmental here? How do you understand that it's community-based? So that's going on there. Okay. We had several, one of the things, problems that we had is try to constrain the list of those who in this first round would be qualified for support. So after lots of discussion, it was anyone that was applying for a geographic name would not be in the category of those qualified to receive support. Pure governmental or parastatal applicants. Now, that was basically if it is a government organization. We did take into account later that just because an applicant got some support from a government didn't exclude them. It was basically that if they were completely supported by a government, they wouldn't be qualified. There's sort of an assumption there that if you're completely supported by a government, you do have some way to obtain funds. On the geographic names, it was largely if you're already in the application process here and coming to these meetings, and somebody who's already considering this, well, then you're not in the category we're talking about, because we're talking about people who cannot enter this process, who couldn't conceive of applying for a new GTLD unless there was some aid. But basically also asking that they have a business model that demonstrates some sustainability. The business model needs, of course, to be appropriate to the culture and economic environment that they're in. And, of course, that's always been one of the problems with the fees that are required, is they sort of reflect one kind of economy, barring people from other economies. One that we have had, we didn't reach consensus on, but was basically excluded, were the dot brand TLDs, in that was a category that there was an assumption that ownership of a brand sort of gave you a certain amount of financial power, and one would assume that if you were doing a dot brand, you had a certain amount of financial resource. We did have a minority viewpoint that sort of said, you know, someone from a developing economy could have barely scratched together a dot brand and you know, want to do something, and so therefore there maybe need more thought on that. So we didn't have full consensus on that point. So the kinds of support to be offered, quite quickly. There were several cost reduction support measures that we recommended. And those were, for example, waiving, the primary is waiving of program development costs. Somehow the idea of asking people from developing economies to, as part of their application fee to apply for a GTLD, pay for the developing cost of the program didn't really make sense to anybody in that group. There was a notion of staggered fees. The way the program goes at the moment is you pay your money up front, and then if you don't make it in the program, you get 70%, you get 30%, you get some percentage back. So basically reversing that for an applicant where need was defined, where for whatever the fee was, you paid the 30%. If you made it through that, then you paid the another 20%. So basically reversing that so that a applicant who had need as defined by the program would have an easier entry into the application process. There were several other cost reduction. Please do read the report when it comes out. There's sponsorship and funding support, basically going outside of ICANN and looking at, you know, other people that could be brought in to help fund this. There were modifications on the financial continued operation instrument that basically says you need several years of proof of financial, sort of for these financially applicants defined as financially, lower it to somewhere between 6 to 12 months. The notion of a multi-year continuity didn't make sense from a financial aspect. Logistical support, whether that was translation of, you know, application materials one way or the other, just there needed to be more technical support for applicants. Now, one of the things to make clear is we weren't suggesting in any way that they cut back on any of the technical requirements. But there was an assumption, the one I always like to bring up, is there's a requirement for IPv6 capabilities. Well, you know, in many places that may not exist. So some technical way, somebody that does have IPv6 to help put a tunnel to their environment so that they would have that. And then, of course, until the VI got settled, a notion of exception to the rules requiring separation of registry and registrar. Now, that's sort of a moot point with the VI allowing cross-ownership at the moment. Basically, the guiding principles we had was a self-financing responsibility, that there was a notion that they need to be able to pay the applicant, even with financial need, needs to come up with what 50% of whatever the reduced set of fees did, that it couldn't be 100% support that this group would be helping people, that there was a sunset period, that any of the, because some of the kinds of benefit and aid that we talked about were in the sustaining, had to do with, you know, the paying of the yearly fees and such, that any of the aid would sunset after 5 years, that there would be transparency in the applications, who was applying for it, for what sort of name, where were the funding coming from, and things like that. Obviously, once we get into the work on how do you do prove financial need, much of that information would probably not be, you know, as transparent as the rest. Limited government support, as we said, that you couldn't be a government institution, but you could have government support. And then a presumption, a commitment that if you pay, I mean, if you get aid, that and you start to actually make money with the thing, that you're actually able to put some of that money back into a fund for future rounds, for future needy applicants, that there's that sort of obligation that, you know, if you happen to do it in a really successful, that's great. So our next steps, and I'm almost out of time, is that we're trying to get rechartered and basically to take the next step on most of the work, to define what it means to aid, to define how the mechanisms work, to work with staff and others to understand these processes and make recommendations to the community and our chartering organizations on how to actually get it done. I've given this presentation, so you've got it, and I'm certainly available. These are the charter extensions. One issue of delay came up. It says, aren't you going to cause delay with all of this? And the answer is no. First of all, they're going to put in the motion and the charter. Absolutely no way can we delay things. The way we've been looking at it is a sense this work is being done in parallel. If we get chartered to do the next step, then we will continue working in parallel. If we fail, then that means there's no aid. It does not mean that people don't start the GTLD program. At least that's the way we've been looking at it, is that we're racing to make sure that we've got something in time. And last thing, there will be a full meeting on this on Thursday, as these are other places where it's being talked. There will be a general meeting talking about this further Thursday at 10, and I apologize, I went a minute 14 over my 10.
Thank you very much, Avery. I think it's okay to go over a minute and 14 seconds. Does anyone have any questions for Avery on this issue? And I'd also be interested to hear whether this is something that the GAC would still want to comment on as an outstanding issue for the new GTLD program. Kenya, please.
I would like to thank Avery for that very good presentation and also commend the work done by Jazz. To remind us all that I think it's not a forgotten issue regarding cost reduction. I think the GAC is very, still quite concerned about just reduction of costs. So it's not just specifically on the technical requirements and others. But also to mention that I think we would like to see a little bit more, outreach efforts and awareness efforts being conducted in some of our countries, especially when you look at how important the GTLD process is going to be also from an entrepreneurial perspective. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Alice. Any other comments? Please, Brazil.
Thank you, Alvaro Galvani from Brazil, Ministry of Foreign Affairs. First, a question I would like to pose is regarding if there is the technical requirements posed that are present in the guidelines. At some extent, we in our internal consultations, some people recognize that the technical requirements were far beyond the structures that exist in developing countries. This is not only a matter of capacity building or providing or assistance, but it's the technical requirements looks to be a real barrier to the development of this kind of business in developing countries. But I would like also to present a more general comment that I have to do because it was also a result from our internal consultations. I haven't heard yet from any private company in Brazil when we are trying to go hard and go deep in that consultations. Any real interest or intention, they don't see the creation of new GTLDs as a priority from developing countries, especially not even from developing countries. Let me make myself clear. If we consider the internet users, I think it's not very clear the demand for new GTLDs. At some extent, when I'm looking for all the presentations, I think there's a lot of effort to create a big market that are very that will be very profit will bring more a lot of profit for registries, registrars, related services of legal and technical approach. But if we consider the internet users, I'm not sure if this is the point. I just want to make this concern share with you, because this is one concern that we are dealing with, and we also think on this point when we make all the reflections of the work. But I do appreciate the work that has been done by the working group, and we expect to join efforts in also providing new inputs for the working group. Thank you.
Would you like to respond, Avery?
Sure, I'll respond to both. First of all, on the outreach, I think that that's part of the certainly we've talked about doing some of the outreach as one of the requirements of the plan. And then I think second, in the second phase of this, is more outreach in terms of designing how it's done. But that was a specific reason why we asked for these plans to be translated into the five UN languages in addition to English, so that more people could read them, so that it would go further than just this particular audience. So I think we've had the outreach in mind, and we're getting there. In terms of Brazil's question, in terms of we don't really know how many applicants would qualify. We're certainly not assuming that there's a booming market out there for the applicants from small communities with IDNs that aren't, you know, with languages and scripts that aren't yet represented, that are not in a large fund. We really don't know. We've made certain projections, you know, there could be 5, there could be 10 such applicants if there was aid. What we have known is certain people have come and spoken to us and said, you know, there's this kind of interest, but we just don't even have an entry point in it the way it's designed at the moment. So we're looking at that. In terms of the comment about technical, that's basically something that at the beginning our group stayed away from. Our group was not about defining what the technical requirements should or shouldn't be. What we looked at is how existing registrars and registries might be able to provide assistance to help others overcome those barriers. The discussion on whether that was too high a threshold to be set and whether the threshold set by staff matches what the GNSO meant when it said there isn't a one-size-fits-all, it has to be appropriate, was not an issue that this group looked at all. It's how do we help people meet the requirements that ICANN has set, and we didn't touch it.
Thank you, Avery. If there are no more requests to speak, then let me thank you on behalf of the GAC for taking the time to come and present to us on this issue, and we will certainly consider the matter further.
Thank you very much for giving me the time to talk to you about it, and I'm glad you're going to consider it further.
Great. Okay. All right. So now... just going to connect my laptop up to the screen, so it'll take a moment. My eyesight isn't very good, but perhaps yours is a bit better. Are we more or less able to see the screen with this size of font? What I'm proposing to do is just review the part of the GAC bylaws that talks about the treatment of GAC advice so that we can refresh our memories on what's actually written there, and then actually draft or come up with a list of points that we might want to make regarding timing and process in relation to this advice and what we know are the dates and the current progress with the final draft applicant guidebook for new GTLDs. So why don't I just read through this? It won't take very long, and we can reflect a little bit, and then we can try to come up with that list. Is that a good way to proceed? Yeah? Okay. Nodding. All right. Okay. So, point J from the ICANN bylaws. The advice of the Governmental Advisory Committee on Public Policy Matters shall be duly taken into account, both in the formulation and adoption of policies. In the event that the ICANN Board determines to take an action that is not consistent with GAC advice, it shall so inform the committee and state the reasons why it decided not to follow that advice. The Governmental Advisory Committee and the ICANN Board will then try in good faith and in a timely and efficient manner to find a mutually acceptable solution. And point K. If no such solution can be found, the ICANN Board will state in its final decision the reasons why the Governmental Advisory Committee advice was not followed, and such statement will be without prejudice to the rights or obligations of the GAC members with regard to public policy issues falling within their responsibilities. Okay. So, okay, what shall be our first point in the list? Frank.
Okay, I think I'm missing something here. This seems to be a straightforward, very clear statement of process. Why is it necessary to discuss that at this meeting?
What I'm proposing is that we need to communicate something to the board, and if the process outlined in the bylaws is sufficient and you would just like to point at that, then that's an option. If we want to be more specific about the finer details, then that's an option as well. But I'm in your hands as to what is the best path, United States.
Thank you, Heather. I guess I think it is useful to kind of refresh our understanding, limited as it might be, because I don't know that we've ever actually experienced this process. So it is a process point. My takeaway from the presentation we had from Kurt was that at least at a staff level, he seems to feel fairly positive that GAC advice has been pretty much taken into account. I am guessing we would not entirely concur with that positive assessment, okay? That we believe there remain some outstanding issues, and some of them are not so insignificant. Geographic names, IP protection, consumer protection, the objections procedures, da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm sure we could have a nice scorecard. And I think what Heather's probably nudging us in the direction of, and we're missing our colleague Mark Carvel from the UK stuck in London, but he has been holding the pen, and I think he had made a sort of commitment to us that he would start to do that, and maybe we just need to help him by starting ourselves to develop a scorecard. I think it behooves us to see what the ICANN scorecard is. And again, all due respect to Kurt, not a verbal rundown from a staff member, but something in writing. Something that actually tells us how they have and have not. I would also like to just comment for the record, I don't know that I or anybody else who's provided comments in this process would agree with his assessment that the staff analysis of comments received creates the, quote, rationale. In fact, I would reject that statement flat out, and I think the GAC may need to say so, because if he is our primary interface on new GTLDs between us and the board when we're not sitting in the same room, I would certainly not want him to characterize that as a GAC understanding, because I don't believe that we would share that. So I think what Heather is perhaps trying to, you know, prepare us for, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems really practical to me, we think there do remain some outstanding issues, but we're faced with a prospect that this board may well take a vote this Friday to adopt this version of the guidebook and to start implementation. So that, to our minds, I think, triggers this particular provision in the bylaws, and so we'd need to understand what the process actually will involve and when will it kick in. Does that help? That's my understanding, at least.
Please, New Zealand.
Don't get me wrong. I don't in any way disagree that that process is appropriate or that it needs to be applied. But it does seem to me to be very clear. And if we do need to point out to the board that those steps haven't been followed, then that is a letter. But what I'm saying is that that process seems to me to be fine in outline as it stands. It does not need amendment. It may well need enforcement in some sense. Is that where we're at? Okay, thank you.
Norway, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. We also really feel it's important to make a statement here from the GAC to remind the ICANN board about this process. So there is unmistakable clear here that we feel that issues has not been resolved and therefore it is not possible to proceed to a final decision. I think we might go into some kind of detail or not on these issues, or maybe just point out the overarching issues. Of course, if we go into more detail, it will, of course, be an argument of, well, this has been taken into account and this not, and so on. So we might have a sort of overarching fields where we say this has not been fully taken into account, and therefore this sort of procedure will then be applied if they possibly want to make to come to a decision. But other views are appreciated from the GAC. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for that. Anyone else wanting to react? Maria, Sweden, please.
Thank you very much, Heather. Maria from Sweden here. Yeah. Kurt was pointing at that chapter in the document that actually was a summary of all the public comments, and he wanted to point us actually to read it, and I have to be very honest to say I haven't. So I just wonder if any of... if you GAC colleagues have read it, and if you consider it's been the input we need, or do we need any additional input? I'm not sure that because what I think it's very interesting is not only actually have a reaction on what our advice had led them to take decisions or not, or what kind of support they got from us and what that led to. It's also interesting to know if they get contradiction advice from some other group, and how much those two inputs are going to lead to their decisions. So because I have to say, from the governmental point of view, it's impossible for me or for us to cover all aspects of this. It's a lot of business-related aspects that it's impossible for us to cover, and those perspectives will be very interesting also to see. I mean, in taking into account how much have they been taken into account in the decision, and how much has that been related to the GAC advice, and so it's a broader perspective, just not only the GAC advice, it's also the other perspectives. But I mean, maybe this chapter, this for me unread chapter, might be the answer. I don't know. So please help me out here.
Norway, please.
Yes, just a quick point on what I've previously said. We might have to be concrete and specific to point out so that there is no doubt that our concerns has not been met. Like, for example, in the letter from the Assistant Secretary of Department of Commerce that pointed out a couple of specifics and details. So I think we might have to identify those specific issues that has not been taken, so to be have no ambiguity. Thanks.
Thank you. Italy?
Yes. So I think that we should be in condition. I see two alternatives. One is that specifically, we are able to say that, for example, for the study on trademark protection, we think that the assurances, and we are not convinced that this is satisfactory enough, because we studied this specific argument, and is only one of the list that Susan made before. But of course, we could also go in some details of the other aspects. Another way is to declare that we had no time to analyze the improvements in the draft final DAG, and then we then ask more time, and practically we implicitly say that the board should not approve this Wednesday, this Friday, the so-called draft final. So we have to have some idea, some discussion, and then decide which position, because of course the position is that we do not say firmly that we don't want to that the draft final is approved, and if we have a soft position, the board could say that in the end they could improve still the final draft. So we have to be realistic on that. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Italy. Presumably, the board would have the option of finalizing parts of the applicant guidebook, not necessarily the entire thing, but you know that's a possibility. Okay, next I have Germany, then the United States, Denmark, and then the EU Commission.
Yes, I have a similar interpretation as our colleague from Italy in this regard, because yes, if we read especially our remarks in respect of DAC 4 and the response we received, and I just mentioned in the discussion we had prior two issues regarding trademark protection. They were mentioned in a letter with, I think, very clear words, which were in a sense that everybody who reads our position would see this is a very important and crucial issue for us, and they were not answered, not referred to in the answer. And that is something, okay, we cannot even say that we see there is the answer, we cannot accept it. No, there is no answer. And in this respect, I think it's very difficult to give any impression that we can accept this so-called final guidebook as it is. And I think it is really clear from our side that it, at least in the situation we are now, it's not possible. And also discussed, and also many other colleagues mentioned, it is not an issue that can be solved in a quick way, because it is a very comprehensive work we are have received, and it is needs some kind of interaction with various entities in our governments. And I'm only in a position to have a preliminary evaluation of this, but I'm not in the position to say that is our last position of our government in this respect. Thank you.
Thank you, Germany, United States.
Thank you, Heather. I think getting to the issue of you raised a very interesting point that I wanted to, I think it might be worthwhile pursuing, whether bits and pieces of the guidebook could be adopted. I mean, I'm certain that there are whole chunks of this document that probably have been, you know, fully reviewed and vetted by, I think, as Maria pointed out from Sweden, the players on the ground who are going to be much more directly affected, and maybe fairly cut and dried and fairly straightforward. But I think what has made it challenging for the GAC to be able to travel to Cartagena with final positions or final views is the fact that our exchanges have been, between the GAC and the board, have sort of been crossing time-wise. So I think that's, in fact, just to share with our colleagues in the room who are not government people, to understand the motivation behind the GAC's most recent letter was to actually try to go on the record saying, you know, we really hope that, we note that there are some outstanding communications that we've sent to you. We don't have answers to all of them. We'd like to get answers to all of them because we've been going on the record, and yet we don't have answers. So no sooner did we send that letter, the next day we got a letter from ICANN responding to the comments we had sent in September on DAG V4. So, you know, and in the interim, of course, we had the, quote, final applicant guidebook. So there's been a lot of churn and a lot of documentation flying around. And as Hubert points out, you know, all of us have to consult more broadly with other agencies in national capitals. And it's not very easy to do that in this short time frame. So I think what the GAC had been trying to convey was that we really still feel strongly that the process needs to be fully informed. And so at a minimum, what I think we said in the last GAC letter that the NTIA letter just sent 2 days ago tried to reinforce is a commitment that ICANN itself made in the affirmation of commitments, that it would provide a rationale and explanations for all of the decisions it has taken. And my comment earlier, Maria, it might go to your question, and this could be a view shared only by the U.S., so I welcome the views of my colleagues. I have looked at staff analyses of comments received on different versions, and I've also been informed by constituencies across the board in the United States who have submitted comments in the successive rounds that they do not agree with the staff analyses or summaries, that they think they are inaccurate, that they didn't capture everybody's views, and they don't technically provide an explanation in total as to why certain views were accepted and others were rejected. So it would be my perspective that those staff analyses or summaries would not constitute a rationale for us at all, that we would expect to see a properly framed explanation. Why was this decision taken? Why was that position rejected? So that we have a clearer record. So I think, you know, I don't know whether, Stefano, you know, you've presented us with some alternatives here, that I don't know that we've discussed this enough to get to that, but I do agree with Hubert and Ornulf. I think the GAC has to be pretty clear again and learn from the board what their intentions are, could they agree to parts of it and commit to resolving the differences that we have identified in other parts? Could we agree on a process to go forward for that? Because, quite candidly, we've simply had several exchanges of letters and brief exchanges face-to-face earlier this year. So we haven't really explored how will we meet the provisions of the bylaws to try to resolve the differences. And that seems to be where we are on at least a couple of key points. So I think there's a lot of merit in at least putting that on the record, that we would like to have that clarified by the end of this meeting. Thanks.
You would like to respond on that, Italy? Okay, please.
So I'll try to be more clear about the alternatives I proposed before. So first of all, the alternative to be too soft does not work. It's not something that we can agree. But I mentioned it as a possibility that the board could interpret that we are almost satisfied, we have some criticism, but they can approve. No, it is not like that. Then we know only from the staff that they think that our requirements has been satisfied. And we interact with the board and not with the staff. So we have also meetings with the board that we might make our explanation, and then they have to realize that we are unsatisfied for a number of things. But I think that it should be in the communique, because in the end this will come out in the communique. We should have a position that should not be interpreted only as a veto to approve on the next meeting, but some idea that gives the way how we can gain confidence on the real final version. If this is not enough for the board will have to interact strictly with us in between, in order to avoid that in next meeting in March we are repeating the same exercise. So should be a joint work that starts from this position that we are taking now.
Thank you for that, Italy. I have Denmark, EU Commission, and then Brazil.
Thank you. These are interesting proposals, and it also comes back to my comment earlier about process, because I really can't see that the board can take a decision on parts of the document or the whole on the 10th, the same day where the deadline is. You can't take into account things that come in the same day and analyze them properly and be duly taken into account into the decision. Thank you. I think we should state that to the board. Thank you.
Thank you for that. EU Commission.
Thank you. I think I'm hearing a lot of consensus in the room, actually, about the need that we need to avoid any misunderstanding in our communications with the board on the issue. I mean, I have the impression that there's quite a significant disconnect, actually, between the degree to which the staff feel they've answered GAC concerns and the degree to which we think they've answered our concerns, and I think we should communicate that. I hadn't thought of the idea of invoking the bylaws, actually, which had been mentioned by the US. But the more I think about it, I think it's not an option in the sense that it's a legal requirement. Actually, I don't think it's something we should discuss. It's the bylaws. The bylaws says this will happen. Not it may happen if the GAC asks for it. It says it will happen. So I think we should respect the bylaws, actually, and point out that at the moment, as they're currently drafted, that's a requirement. It's not an option. We should proceed with that. In terms of providing a rationale for articulating the decision that they've made and how they've taken our views into account and those of other stakeholders, we may have a surprising ally on the board, actually, because the recommendations of the review team, and I understand the chairman of the board's on the review team, includes a recommendation number 20, which says the board should, in publishing decisions, adopt the practice of articulating the basis for its decision and identify the public comment that was persuasive in reaching its decision. At the same time, the board should identify the relevant basis and public comment that was not accepted in making its decision. The board should articulate the rationale for rejecting relevant public comment in reaching its decision. I understand that proposal has been endorsed by the review team, including the chairman of the board, so I don't anticipate any difficulty in making that recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Brazil, please.
Yes, UK just raised the point I would like to raise, that this situation we are facing here, it's strictly related to the discussion we have in the review team of accountability and transparency. We spent a lot of energy in analyzing this document, and this is also part of building trust and confidence in the whole process of ICANN. I think we should also use this argument, this linkage between this situation and the suggestions that are in the report of the review team. Thanks.
Thank you. I see no further requests to speak at this time. Okay. So I guess the question is, are we content to communicate these points in the joint board GAC meeting on Tuesday, or is there something additional or different we need to do? I think one of the points that's been made is that because there are because we're approaching the finalization of the draft applicant guidebook, whether this week or soon thereafter, that we can't necessarily afford the same kind of back and forth that we've had at each meeting. So we may need to act differently and consider how we need to best make our point and in coming up with ways to meet with the board, because they do want to consult with us at least on geographics this week and if possible other issues that are part of the new GTLD program. I would really welcome suggestions on that. If we are content at this point to consider raising this as part of that joint board GAC meeting, then that's fine. We can move on to the next agenda item. But I'd be interested in hearing from you, whether in this meeting or in the corridors, as to respond to the requests that we are going to get from the board on how to meet and consult on geographics and, as I say, other new GTLD issues. Okay. Kenya, please.
Thank you. I'd like to suggest that we perhaps consider seriously, addressing these issues with the board before the Tuesday meeting. Because the back and forth, you know, we can't keep going round and round regarding GAC advice. The bylaws are very clear. You know, we can link it to the ART review team, but also the fact that, you know, on Friday they are going to possibly be making a decision on DAG 5, I think, and so it's crucial and critical that we seriously address our concerns and strongly our concerns regarding process and how our advice is taken before the Tuesday. So I don't have a suggestion in terms of timing. Perhaps you can look at the timetable, but I think I would suggest we develop that scorecard and also strongly express our concerns.
Thank you, Kenya. Any other thoughts? Germany, are you wanting the floor? Okay.
Yes, thank you. I think it is could be quite useful to have this exchange on geographic names, because yes, there are problems, and we reiterated during this process. Maybe an observation: it is a bit late to in the process to start such a form of exchange after the final guidebook was published. I think this would have been an approach we could have had 1 year ago. The second one is that, yes, the people participating in this kind of group may speak on their behalf, they may speak on behalf of their country, but it may be difficult that they speak on behalf of the entire GAC. It is we are talking on delicate legal aspects, and yes, I should not have the impression that everything is solved when they exchange it, but I think it's an adequate way to further the discussion and to improve the relation in the results of the work, that we have a common understanding, everybody knows what is was the rationale behind a position. But I'm not sure whether anybody who would participate from the side of the GAC in this kind of working group would be able to say, I speak on behalf of the GAC, and if we agree today, this is an agreement where the entire GAC is bound by. Thank you.
Thank you, Hubert. In all likelihood, when consulting with the board in the formal bylaw sense, that the entire GAC would need to be able to participate in that. You know, they may choose not to or choose to observe, but I think that's likely the principle we need to follow. Are there any additional comments here? Yes, Sweden, please.
Thank you very much, Heather. I just want to say I very much agree, listening to you all here, I very much agree with Norway and other countries and the Commissioner saying about trying to be really precise. This has come to a point that we really have to be very clear of exactly what we want and what we the arguments and the points we want to make. So maybe we could be, technical person, so I would like to make like bullet points and say this is all the answers we need to have, this is all the objections we have and so on. Try to be really clear to do that. And then we need some time to do that and try to find that. And I think me and Suzanne were looking upon a few possible things, so let's see what we can do, but I think we need to put it down before we meet the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. I think I heard a volunteer there to draft some points, which is very welcome. Malta, you wanted to speak?
Yeah, I'm not the volunteer to draft the points. It's merely to really second the approach really voice really my view really about this, and I think that it is so important. I understand the dilemma that we're into, that we're dealing with a deadline that is coming up on Friday. We know that, you know, we have an event on Tuesday where we're going to have a further discussion about this. But it appears to me that, you know, we need to have some communication at this particular point in time with the board to alert them to the specifics of the concerns that we have. Up until now, it's been a very interesting couple of hours that we have spent this afternoon. I think it was very good of Kurt to come here and dedicate the time that he has with us. Having said that, you know, speaking for myself, I have not really been at all reassured on the major issues that we have had for a long time about these issues. I think the point has been made that we have been not speaking to each other, but speaking at each other but about this. And I think that's the point that we need to make now, that perhaps come up with a list really on the issues that we are really not comfortable with irrespective of the decision that the board has threatened to make on Friday. I feel very uncomfortable with the process, the way it seems as though we have been really working in a real world action in this, that a process has been launched and not a good deal of thought and consultation haven't taken place before that process was launched. I also have really a question about the possibility of approving a partial process, you know, rather than the whole thing. I'm not too sure how, you know, how practical that is. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So I think we have two volunteers. Is that right? Did Sweden volunteer the United States? Anyway,
Sweden most certainly did volunteer the United States. So I'm going to volunteer more colleagues around the table. I see hands. And just apologies, Chair, but we did, in looking at the ICANN schedule for Monday, which I know is sort of the open day, if the morning session on new GTLDs from, I think it's 11 to 12, is a presentation, and if there are ICANN staff in the room, maybe they can help us know this, is a presentation similar to the one that Kurt Pritz delivered to us today, then we could probably profitably exit the room and spend a little time in this room brainstorming on this collection of bullets so that that might help advance the GAC's preparations for the Tuesday afternoon. So all GAC members are welcome to escape the large meeting and come and do some drafting. Does that sound good?
I think that's a great suggestion. Shall we aim to do that? Okay, some nodding, good. Please, European Commission.
Yes, just saying I'd like to volunteer, but it seems to be an open group. But it occurs to me that we might kill two birds with one stone. When we draft this this text, maybe we could draft it in the form that we can also use it for the communique, and then we don't have to do the whole thing again on Wednesday. I mean, I imagine this will be a substantive part of our communique, so we can finish early and go to the bar. Thank you.
Another excellent suggestion. Thank you. Italy?
Tomorrow morning we have a program of the working group. There is an agenda already prepared. Tomorrow morning there is the meeting working group. There is an agenda about that already defined, because we have to talk of something of what we discussed this afternoon, I suppose.
The issues are linked, yes. There is overlap between the issues of GAC advice and what we're about to talk about, the accountability and transparency review team recommendations, yeah. Okay. All right, so let's conclude on that item and move to talk about the accountability and transparency review team recommendations. So we know that the recommendations were posted for public comment, and that public comment period ended just before these meetings now in Cartagena. But I know that some colleagues did make submissions to that. So the way I would like to proceed, because we don't have a single member of the GAC identified as a lead coordinator on that, is to refer to those that have made submissions to raise what they think are the key points that they would like to bring to the attention of us here, and then we can have some discussion this afternoon before we meet with the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, which is now scheduled for tomorrow in this room. And I understand we will have the full review team. So I think that's quite positive. And we are scheduled to meet from 1:30 until 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. So if I may look to Denmark, who I think made their submission first, so that means they get to introduce their submission first. So please.
Thank you, Chair. We submitted our comments on the 23rd of November, and actually we believe that the focus of the recommendations have been on improving the processes. And I think our discussions today prove that this is very much the case and should be. I'm not going to read or refer directly to our comments, but more so focus on the implementation of the recommendations and how, I mean, what the process will be after this and how the board will react to the recommendations, so that we know that, because this is a review team that was set up by the AOC. And as such, I think we need some kind of a process forward for how the board will react, and also I will stop here for now. Thanks.
Thank you for that, Julia. I think you're right. We don't actually know what exactly the process would be for taking into account the recommendations as an output of the review team, and it's also the first review team. So the process that is followed for this first one suggests strongly what will happen with review teams 2, 3, and 4. So thank you. Norway, did you have some issues you could highlight for us as well?
Thank you, Heather. Yes, we also submitted some comments to the review team recommendations, also, as Denmark said, I won't sort of read or detail too much, but some issues are quite of high importance, and I think the whole of the GAC agrees with a lot of these recommendations. Regarding what the GAC advice and how the GAC advice has been treated is really a very important issue as we see it, and how that should be factored into the processes. And I think you reminded us, Heather, how that should be done with your reference to the bylaws. And it's actually, as I saw there, it's actually stated that it should be factored into the processes. There, it says that in the bylaws. And I think the obligation there to make that process and how that should work would be the responsibility of ICAN, how that should be done. Of course, we as the GAC, of course, could input and make suggestions there as well. But there is that it actually is going to be factored into the processes and into the board is actually in the bylaws now, and it has not been implemented. So that's really one important issue as we see it. Also, this about the communication between the GAC and the board. So that's really important. Also, one thing, as also the European Commission mentioned about the rationale for decisions and the recommendation number 20 is actually also quite important to have that. We have sort of see clearly how the inputs from the public the public input has been factored into, and how the input from the different parts of the ICAN organization has been inputted into the processes and explained the rationale for making this or that decision. And of course that makes it transparent, if we can see that. I think that's at least a couple of issues that we've highlighted, but thanks.
Thank you for that, Norway. I believe that France has also made a submission, so if you would like to, please.
Yeah, thank you, Dridon. I'm Christian Tison, the French representative. France is quite happy with the proposed draft recommendations made by the review team. We especially appreciate three of them: the proposition for a regular review cycle to ensure transparency and accountability in a permanent way, and we appreciate also the necessity to always explain the board decisions. This is very important, as my colleagues said. And we also appreciate the recommendation 12 regarding the I've already said this is about the necessity to explain the board decision with formal and documented written processes. So we are very happy with that, but we think also that beyond the assessment of the interaction between the GAC and ICANN itself, France believes that the current exercise of the review team is an appropriate frame to think about the role of the government in the ICANN governance, and we would like that the review team explores way to enhance the role of governments in the ICANN governance. For instance, would it be possible for government to be more represented at the board? Should it be given a voting right to the GAC liaison, for example? Of course, these questions raise the issue of the legal status of ICANN and its legal accountability. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Interesting that no one seems to be challenging the ATRT recommendations. Okay, good. Please, EU Commission.
It's very constructive challenging. It's not criticism. I'll preface that by saying I think one of the things we should not forget and would be very useful when we meet with the review team is to express our thanks to them, actually, for their efforts this year. Those of us who followed them know that they made a very significant personal commitment to this. All of the review team members, I'm sure, are very senior people in their own rights, actually. So I think this, in its own way, is quite remarkable, actually. There have been very many review processes in the past in ICANN, I think, but this one really has, I think, set a new benchmark, actually, for professionalism, in my opinion. The one issue I did want to challenge was, and it's an issue I shared, I think, with GAC colleagues recently. Manal, from Egypt, who's on the review team, has seen it. I also shared it with Fabio Colasanti, who's on the review team. It's the issue of Recommendation 12, actually, and it's part of Recommendation 12. I'll just read it. It's very brief. At the same time, the GAC should agree that only a consensus view of its members constitutes an opinion that triggers the board's obligation to follow the advice or work with the GAC to find a mutually acceptable solution. The GAC can continue to provide informal views, but these would not trigger any obligation on the board to follow such input. Now, the reason I raised an issue with that, actually, is firstly, the GAC has only ever given consensus advice. So I find it an odd issue for them to focus on. The way we give advice by drafting communiques or agreeing letters for the chair to send actually requires us to have consensus. So I think we've never actually given anything other than consensus advice. We have on at least one famous occasion explained that some GAC members are worried about X and other GAC members are worried about Y. That was consensus advice. I mean, that was explaining that there were a variety of views in the GAC. They weren't contradictory in that case, actually. They were mutually, they were not mutually exclusive pieces of advice that we gave. But anyway, my main point is I don't understand why they felt it was necessary to say that. But having said it, it made me think, actually, and I think we need to avoid a situation where if we got very formalistic about consensus, one GAC member could effectively veto the concerns of more than 100 other GAC members on a major issue of public policy. So if the implication is that there should be some mathematical 100% requirement for GAC members, then I think I'd object to that. Now, it's never happened, but now the issue's been raised, I think that would be my reaction. I think also a reality check is necessary. I think it's quite remarkable now I look back on it that we've reached so much consensus over the years on such a huge variety of issues. But in the real world, there are different applicable legislation in different jurisdictions. There are different government policies. In the real world, private companies are often faced with the fact that governments have different views. And I think that advice, if we ever come to that advice for the board, should still be useful to the board. It would certainly be more useful than no advice at all, or advice which is so watered down to reach a common approach that it would be valueless to the board and potentially misleading. My final objection to this text, or concern, I should say, was that it introduces the concept of the GAC providing informal views. And again, I'm a bit uncomfortable about that because our role is defined in the bylaws and it says the GAC shall give advice. So, A, there is no provision for us legally, formally, to give informal advice, if that doesn't sound stupid. So we'd need to revisit the bylaws, I think. But more importantly, we'd need to come up with a mechanism to differentiate between formal and informal advice. And I don't think that's very useful. We have enough work on our plate, really, coming up with formal advice and giving it to ICANN. And I think we should leave it at that. Of course, we have interactions with the board formally here. We have interactions with them as individuals. We talk to ICANN staff. We participate in working group meetings and joint working groups. And we can always provide informal advice. But now it's in the recommendations. I felt obliged really to ask a few questions about what the intentions were there and put a few markers down about some of the concerns that I had. But as I said, we didn't submit those formally in a letter in the way other GAC members have, actually. But I know that two of the review team are aware of it. I have to say, I think at least one of them is quite sympathetic to it. I think they would welcome us, actually, challenging a few of the recommendations. I think they'd be quite disappointed if we don't. So I think, having an exchange on this and other issues, actually, we shouldn't be frightened to do that. It doesn't mean we don't appreciate the work they've done and that we don't generally, endorse the recommendations that they're proposing. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Bill. Italy, please.
Okay, following Bill's comment, I agree that maybe the wording is not perfect, but in any case, there is a tentative to clear, first of all, what is GAC advice. This is something that we discussed already, but it is important the text that will be in the final report of the review team, because on the definition of GAC advice is just the interpretation of the role of the GAC, and is very important. About this consensus, is true that the GAC always worked for consensus, and only in one occasion we had a dissenting opinion that was included in a GAC communique, once in 11 years. So And this means that in cases like XXX, I don't want to start the discussion now, but it is quite clear that hardly we could find a consensus. So in certain cases, the GAC, if is not able to promote a consensus opinion, then in the end, GAC cannot say something that is considered an advice. So following this definition. Then it is important to note that is mentioned the need to establish other mechanisms for preparing and reaching agreement on consensus opinion in a more timely manner. So this implies working intersessionally and implies having time for answering that is good enough for the decision making of ICANN. And sometimes we need time to express opinions. So it is something important that is mentioned here. Another thing I wanted to say is that this text is not perfect, but certainly is quite proposing an improvement, let's say. I had the chance to read all the chapters regarding the GAC in the Berkman Center independent contribution to the review panel. And I have to say that reading this, the opinion from the external expert is quite negative about the GAC. And is not considering the evolution, because we have to recognize that with the chairmanship of Yanis Karklins, at least more clarity on what is the role of the GAC. And it is something that started with Paul Toomey in the initial times, then with Sharil Tamizi. And I think that actually the GAC, little by little, succeeded in having more, let's say, predictable output, if not completely satisfactory, of course. But the external opinions and look about our group are not always very positive. And the Berkman Center interviewed a number of persons and got a number of opinions that are not exactly true, in my opinion. But what is important is that in the review panel proposals, the role of the GAC is much more positive, let's say. And they simply indicate how to improve even more in the future.
Thank you, Italy. All right, Malta, please.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Like really my the ones who have spoken before, I think that the review is sort of very thorough, and I concur really with all the recommendations. I think that the review team has to be commended on its effort. There's really one question, and I think it's really more a matter of clarification that I was looking for, and that is on the recommendation number 16, where on the one hand, the review team is really making the point that the participation of GAC should be at as really senior level as is possible, and I think that is something that really member governments have to make a decision about, you know, what the appropriate level should be in that. And then in the last sentence, the part where I'm not very clear about is, you know, third, the board working with the JEC should consider establishing a process by which I can engage a senior government officials on public policy issues on a regular and collective basis. Now, I wasn't clear on this, and in the informal discussions that we've had with the review team, there was really talk about the really concept of a two-tier GAC. So I don't know whether this is in some fashion hinting at that. I would like to understand that a bit better. I think on the concept of a two-tier GAC, I'm not too sure that it would work in the best interest of public policy, to be quite honest. We're dealing with a very complex issue. We've seen how long it has taken to try to come to terms with these, to bring another level into it. I'm not too sure whether there'll be a huge amount of value. It may serve to actually obfuscate or confuse. Thank you.
Thank you. Switzerland, please.
Thank you. We would also congratulate the review team for this work, which is very helpful. We would share the concerns expressed by the Commission of the European Union with regard to paragraph 12, recommendation 12, and also the general distinction between formal and informal. And I don't know what the concrete way forward is, how the GAC is supposed to react to these recommendations. But just thinking of the joint working group on the role of the GAC, I don't know whether that mandate is finished or whether there is a continuation, but maybe we could think of using that group to develop some concrete ideas of how we would improve the working of the GAC, because I think in recommendation 12 and others, the proposals of an online database and kind of creating more transparency, and also if you take the XX case where we're looking for past communiques and other pieces of advice, which for us but maybe also for the board could be made more easily accessible in terms of history, and that we do not have to restate the same things that we stated years ago. So some improvements maybe might be useful, but so the question is, what is the way forward in terms of answering to these advices or recommendations? Thank you.
Thank you for that. I'll try to answer your questions as best I can, and then I'll give the floor to Portugal. In terms of where the ATRT is at, I'll do my best to give you a sense of where they are in the process. Minal, unfortunately, won't be able to attend these meetings, and she would have been the natural person, I think, to turn to brief us. However, the affirmation of commitments provides a deadline of December 31st for the review team to conclude its work. So that is why they concluded the public comment period just before the Cartagena meeting. It was really in order to ensure that they had time to process those comments and produce the final report. And as it is, I think this only leaves them a couple of weeks, in practical terms. So we did request the meeting tomorrow to meet with the review team. So it's really for us to decide how to use that time. That is an opportunity, I think, to at least refine the thinking of review team members on some of these issues. And hopefully it would still be sufficient to have an influence on that final report. But they agreed to meet with us with all those caveats that it's really getting late for additional comments. I do hope that the concerns that we've expressed here, that we will again tomorrow raise those with the review team, and I will turn to you to speak in your GAC member capacities when we meet with them. In terms of the Joint Working Group report, we did discuss this on the agenda setting call a few weeks ago. And the best way forward, I think, is to delay the finalization of the Joint Working Group report until San Francisco, and also to really put off the review of the operating principles that we've also begun within the GAC. And that way we can wait until the report is released on December 31st, and then we can take into account there. And also, we may have more clarity on how the board intends to deal with those recommendations, and then we can take that all into account when finalizing the Joint Working Group report and the work on the operating principles. So I hope that's a useful way of progressing. Okay.
So I was meant to give the floor to Portugal, please.
Thank you very much. Luís Magalhães from Portugal. Well, my first observation regarding this is that that sentence, as it is stated in paragraph 12, certainly is not what helps the most clarity on these issues. As a matter of fact, I don't find any advantage of having several levels of GAC advice, formal, informal, and whatsoever. Also, I don't think it is a good idea somehow to think that GAC input to the decision process at ICANN should be forced to be consensual. I think it's up to the GAC to decide when it should provide input, and there is no need to have that overall restriction hanging on all sorts of input that the GAC can provide. As a matter of fact, the GAC has an advisory role to the board, and it is up to the board to make decisions. We know a lot about that, and advice is advice. So just the contribution of the review committee to introduce an organized process, an organized procedure to register what is the advice provided by GAC, and also its follow-up, and the obligation of the board to explain when not following the GAC advice, what are the rationale for not doing that, is quite a welcome procedure, and I think will solve a lot of misinterpretations, and also will provide GAC a way of calling attention to some advice that has not been registered in this process. So I think this part is quite welcome, but I don't like at all the idea that can be formal, informal, and that any advice would have to be consensual, even if the GAC itself in a meeting, in a regular meeting, and according to its bylaws, decides that it should be provided and say, well, most of the GAC members have this opinion, but there are this and that one that have a different opinion, and to state it. I mean, this should be possible and helpful advice, I think.
Thank you very much. Germany, please.
Yes, I think I will only echo the positions as Portugal has raised, Bill has raised from the European Commission and others, because this question, for me, I frankly did not understand what is the motive behind this postulate to have a consensus, and I think, yes, it's on us to decide whether we consider advice only under consensus principles or after voting or whatever. That's, I think, we should decide. But by the way, I think governments normally know how to work under consensus principles. And I just want to recall the very difficult discussions we had not so long ago in Mexico, in Guadalajara, when we had the ITU meeting. And all these highly controversial telecommunication issues, internet issues, with participations of so many countries all over the world, and all these decisions were made under consensus. In the end, there was a consensus. I recall the discussions we probably will have in the next weeks in the General Assembly on the IGF. There is a consensus in the end. We have a consensus decision, probably, I hope so. And this shows that really governments normally, who knows governmental work, they know how to integrate each other and in the end find compromises. Maybe in some cases it's the other way around, because if you have a compromise, you may not see the real problems, because some of the language may be not so clear. But that's the other side. But on the other hand, if you really have to read the text if you read a text saying several GAC members raised a concern, that doesn't mean the GAC raised a concern. And if it's a question of understanding, okay, but that's really a language problem and not a problem of consensus. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Okay. No additional requests for the floor, and we're almost... Oh, I'm sorry. Denmark, please.
No, I'll just like to say that I agree with the comments on the consensus issue. And I also think that when the GAC state in a communique or whatever else that are several countries thinks this and X thinks that and Y thinks this, this is actually very valuable for the board to know, and they should also, I think, maybe make explanation as to why they haven't chosen this or chosen the other one or not even any of them. This is consensus advice just to state it in the communique. It's there. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Okay. EU Commission.
Thank you. Just a very small one while we're in the mood of constructive criticism. I was prompted by a comment about the ITU plenipotentiary, where I know there are a lot of discussions about internet governance issues, but I wasn't there, but I imagine nobody questioned whether the delegates were of a sufficiently authoritative level when they were taking part in the discussions. I find that phrase actually in here unfortunate. It's not the first time this idea has come up, actually, that we're not actually senior enough to give advice to the GAC, to the board. I've tried pointing out that I think that's pretty offensive, actually. I don't think we would ever say that to our colleagues in the GNSO or CCNSO or the board even, actually, that we're not sure they are sufficiently authoritative, actually, to interact with us. I doubt very much I'll be making this point tomorrow, but I just thought I'd mention that because it irritates me every time I see it. It comes up regularly, actually, this strange idea. I mean, I'm happy to admit I'm not that senior, actually, but I have the authority to speak for my organization in this group. And I know some of my colleagues in this group are senior. And I just really wonder who advised the review team, actually, about the seniority of the people in this group. Did they make an assessment? I wasn't asked, actually. Did they have a survey? I don't know. It strikes me as an odd one, very irritating, but there you are. I'll stop ranting now. Thank you.
It irritates me as well. If we could perhaps make a positive proposal to them, a better way to phrase, I mean, there's clearly a concern there on their part. So if we could suggest alternative wording to them, maybe that's a way to be constructive and less irritated. I actually saw a request for the floor before you, Italy. Yeah, Germany. But, yes, Germany. And then if you would like to speak. And then I'm going to close the meeting. So.
Yes, thank you. Just on Bill's remark. Yes, if the decision-making process in ITU and here in the GAC is different. And you also have to anticipate if in the end there is a treaty to be signed in the ITU negotiations, this treaty binds your country. And yes, you have to be accredited, and it's legally another position, and maybe that helps also the form of representation. Yes, whether senior or not, you are accredited to sign a treaty that binds your legislation, your national legislation, and that's a difference to the situation we have here in the GAC. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Germany. Yes, I think it is different in that sense, that this is not a treaty-binding arrangement. We do have a process for accreditation of a kind to the GAC, and that's the GAC chair. So when members are changing representation, that's formally communicated to the chair, and that's how we manage that. If people want to attend as observers and they're not members, again, that's the invitation of the GAC chair. So we do have some sort of process that's formal in that regard. But anyway, Italy, and then I see Switzerland, and then I am closing the meeting.
Okay, on the same subject, the first sentence in point 16 is very curious, and tomorrow we will should ask to the review team. The board should endeavor to increase the level of support and commitments of governments to the GAC process. So this is good as an intention, but is much more also from us, let's say, from the members, to have an initiative to convince the government that the GAC is relevant, really relevant, and then there is an improvement of the level. And we have been discussing in the GAC in Europe an idea of a super GAC or a senior GAC in previous occasions. But in the end, what happens is that the GAC members have an experience, and also in the internet governance, so strong that more and more are involved in discussions, not only concerning ICANN, but concerning IGFs, concerning internet governance in general. So if the governments will be more sensitive in these aspects, then perhaps those that here don't feel having a higher level should be promoted, let's say, and hopefully also the presence of medium high level representatives that are new could be encouraged. This is very important, also, that is stated in this report.
All right, Switzerland is next, and then Kenya, and then I'm really closing the meeting.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. just a proposal, maybe in terms of redrafting of this. I understand the concerns of the review team, but maybe instead of talking about improving seniority or something like that of the GAC, we should talk about improving political awareness and outreach of internet governance issues within governance. It goes along the lines of what has been said by Italy.
Thank you. I hope we can look at the high-level meeting proposal for governments in San Francisco in that kind of context. Kenya.
I'll save time. I think that's the point I wanted to make. Perhaps we can review this within the context of the high-level meeting, but also maybe a question that's going through my head is, you know, could this be a reflection, the fact that they consider us not senior enough, could it be a reflection of the fact that they don't really take up advice seriously and the processes?
An excellent question. Okay, so okay, the final word, United States. Okay.
But thank you. And it's actually not even on this subject. It is. Apologies to you and to colleagues for before we left new GTLDs to not give you just a quick overview of the NTIA letter that was just sent out Wednesday night. Thursday night. Regrettably, I was traveling all day yesterday, so that's why you didn't get it on the GAC list. But we'll leave it at that. I have circulated it. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to raise them with me. We're not going to do it now. I think the chair would skin me alive. But thank you. I did want to apologize to everybody for not mentioning it earlier. It is out there. You now have it, and I'm very happy to talk about it with anybody. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Suzanne. I think a few people will likely take you up on that. Okay, so we meet tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. For the joint working group meeting on the review of the role of the GAC. And I'll ensure that we have copies of the latest version of that report available tomorrow morning so that you can have those in front of you. We haven't discussed a great deal within that joint working group the policy development process and how the GAC fits into that. So if I can just get you thinking tonight about how we might want to flesh out that section of the report as being still, I think, a significant piece that we haven't yet really addressed in any great detail. And with that, I'll close today's meeting and have a good evening all.